Trista.
And I'm Crystal.
And welcome back to the Forensic... No, it's fine. Welcome back to the Forensic Mythology Podcast. Today we're going to be talking about winter holiday myths.
Yeah. There's a lot of them. I mean, there's a lot of wintry holidays, so...
That tracks.
But I'm talking about, like... Not all winter holidays, because that would take me, like, 7 days.
Yeah, you just hand-picked the fun ones.
So, basically, like, pagan traditions that became Christmas. And then also some creepy, weird...
Because the Christians steal everything. You might want to edit that one out.
Well, it's okay. I'll leave it.
All right.
But also, there's some, like, creepy, weird side stories, like the Yule Cat.
There's a Yule Cat?
Yep. We're going to get
there.
And, like, I thought, oh, this is an easy subject that I already know plenty about, so it'll be quick and easy. And then I remembered all the crazy things that the Catholic Church has done throughout history, and I started to get really sidetracked.
There's a lot of crazy things.
So, I don't know where we're going to end up today. You'll just have to be along for the ride.
All right.
So to start off with Christmas, like regular old commercial capitalist Christmas in America, it's presented as being the birthday of Jesus, even though, let's be honest, Santa Claus usually figures much more prominently than Jesus, at least in our popular imagination. So, December 25th, Jesus' birthday, right?
Yeah.
Wrong.
Supposedly. Oh.
There's a lot of reasons that this is an extremely unlikely birthday for Jesus, which I'll get into in a couple of minutes, but, it's pretty easy to understand why December 25th was eventually declared Jesus' birthday by the early Roman Church. Because the Roman Empire was in the process of transitioning from the many gods and goddesses that had traditionally been part of their culture, along with all the specific rites and traditions that went along with each of them. And it, you know, was transforming into this monotheistic empire where Christianity was the religion sanctioned by the state.
Mm-hmm.
So I know I just, like, said that whole concept in one sentence, but yeah. It really happened over hundreds of years. And during that time, there was this whole spectrum of the way that people worshipped, who they worshipped, how it affected their daily lives, so on and so forth. So, okay. You got it so far.
Yeah. I'm following.
All right. So as Christianity grew in power and influence, so obviously did the church, which came out of this era sort of dominating the political landscape in medieval Western Europe, where church leaders were more powerful than kings. So imagine, if you will, that the common people living in this metropolitan society with a long history of having a pantheon of gods and goddesses and loving their holidays and traditions are met with like the fairly newly powerful Christian church that's now telling them absolutely not.
I'd be so pissed off if I'm just like chilling with my pantheon of gods and goddesses and we're all homies and some dude comes up and he's like, hey, you only get one holiday this year now. And I'm like, what?
Yeah, so, you know, they're like, stop your pagan practices, stop worshiping your pagan gods, stop your cultural traditions, do what we do. This is the only way. And a lot of people were like, no. So,
I'm on their side.
They were like, okay, boomer. So a lot of them don't stop, especially celebrating some of their more wild holidays. Like, well, I'll get into that in a second. But when church officials were like, how do we get people to do what we want them to do, there was this one guy on the marketing team that was like, I know. Let's just put Jesus labels on the same things that they already are doing.
Awesome.
And then we can say that the church has triumphed over the pagan rituals. So,
gotta love manipulation. What is that called?
So that guy got a raise.
It's like nowadays when like the ad people who make ads you know, uh-huh. What's the word? I'm trying to find the word.
Marketing?
No, not marketing. It's just like, you know what? Just scrap my whole thing.
Oh, careful,
just
we're bumping this. So they said instead of having a celebration for the sun god, whose birth was on December 25th, we're gonna say that this is a celebration for the
Wait, which sun god?
Of God. all the sun gods, basically. I'll get there in a second.
Okay.
Wink, wink.
I was like, there's the a lot of God, sun gods.
Not the sun god.
Ha ha ha.
My dad funny jokes pun. Are on point.
I bet all the Christians laughed at that one.
So then we're going to say that Jesus has his birthday on December 25th. Right. And everyone was like, that's an excellent idea. So we see this happening.
Hold on. Imagine being Jesus and you're like, oh my gosh, I can't wait to go back to like Earth or whatever and see all my friends. We're all going to celebrate my birthday. And you get down there and they just changed the date of your birthday. It's like if I like came home one day and you're like, happy birthday. I'm like, it's the middle of January. Like, and you're like, I know.
Just gaslighting you. I like, just, this has always been your birthday.
Yeah, it's, I know it's January. It's always been January. What are you talking about?
Poor Jesus. Okay. So we also see this happening with Easter. Like, if you've ever wondered what bunnies and eggs have to do with Jesus dying on the cross. But that's a story for another time. So.
Just do that one on Easter.
Maybe so.
Because, you know, you get it. It's related to Easter.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
So in addition to the sun god's birthday, we also have the winter solstice, which is usually a few days before December 25th, and comes with its whole own set of celebrations, which the fact that, you know, there is the winter solstice, that figures prominently into a lot of these celebrations, but I'm not even diving into the whole, like, witchy winter solstice stuff, because that's a whole, it's... It would be like 20 pages long. So I'm kind of going to gloss over that a little bit. But so I did say I would briefly go over the reasons why Jesus was definitely not born on December 25th for context. So here are a few reasons. December is really cold and rainy, and shepherds would have likely sought shelter for their sheep instead of being out in the fields where the angels came to announce to them that Jesus had been born. They're also supposed to be in Bethlehem for a census, which those were not held in the winter because of the obvious travel concerns. Jesus's cousin John the Baptist was 6 months older, and based on the time suggested by when John the Baptist's father Zechariah was serving, because he was a priest, was serving his regular term in the temple, that would put Jesus's birth in September. So basically, though, finding the actual birth date of Jesus doesn't really matter in any real way to believers or non-believers. It doesn't really have any bearing on what people believe. I'm mostly just going over this for my larger point of where a lot of these, like, winter solstice, Yule, Saturnalia celebrations come from. So,
gotcha.
So now that we got Jesus out of the way.
I was about to make a joke.
Okay.
Wait, who killed Jesus? It was the Romans, right? Not the Romans. Wait, yes, it was the Romans. I was about to say me when I'm Roman, but then I was like, that's not a very funny joke. And then I went, wait, was it even the Romans? Then I second-guessed myself, and it would have been a funny joke if I hadn't just spent the last 30 seconds talking about it.
It's bad when you have to explain your joke. Yeah. So now we'll start with the sun god's birthday. And this, in at the time when Jesus was up and coming on the scene. Another really similar cult, I guess we'll say, was that of Mithras in Rome. And so his birthday was said to be December 25th. Also, Apollo's birthday was December 25th in Greece. And then, like, when you start looking at it, it's like every sun god around the world, their birthday is December 25th.
Really?
And it makes sense because it's, like, the winter solstice is the shortest day of the year and the longest night. And then it's kind of like it stays that way for a couple days. And then, like, three-ish days later is when you start to see the lengthening of the day.
Oh.
And so that's that. Puts us right at December 25th or the night of the 24th, you know? So it makes sense why all around the world when it's dark and scary and cold, it's like people are waiting for the sun to come back. So that's why it's always a sun god celebration.
Makes sense.
So I don't know if I just went off track here with that whole thing, but it was basically a celebration of the invincible sun because you have a few days before that, the 21st, the solstice. I just literally said all that. And people are like, it's cold, it's dark, will the sun ever come back again? And then it does, and everyone is here for it.
So. It would be really sad if the sun didn't come back.
It would be unfortunate for all of us. So let's keep in mind when I'm talking about these various celebrations that they are in the dead of winter where there's not a lot of work to be done in these agrarian or pastoral societies, and there's probably a fair amount of existential dread and worrying if there'll be enough food or like heat source to get through the winter. So people are looking for not only a way to distract themselves and have fun with all their idle time if they're not working, but also a way to honor their gods and ensure that they do make it through this winter. So the celebration of Saturnalia was usually held beginning somewhere around December 17th to 19th, and it was wild, like, public revelry in honor of the god Saturn. A lot of emphasis on sex and drinking, general revelry.
Saturn's one of my favorite planets.
Okay.
Jupiter's my favorite, and then it's Saturn. And then I like Mars, and then it gets kind of a little blurry. From then on,
I blurry
I like all the planets, okay. But the only ones I know that I love a lot are Jupiter and Saturn. Those are like Jupiter is my all time favorite planet.
Okay.
Anyway, sorry, I got distracted.
Yeah, that was very
completely
specific.
Off topic. I just wanted to let everyone know.
Not completely, just a little, but
slightly off topic.
Okay, so during the Saturnalia, all business was suspended and many distinctions of rank were forgotten. Masters sometimes waited on their slaves, a custom reflected to this day in the military custom of officers serving Christmas dinner to their men. Or if you work where I do, the supervisors make all of us plebes some soup, and it's called Soups with Soups.
What?
It's true, I promise. So
Soups with soup?
Soups with soups, like the supervisors.
Oh, I didn't get that joke.
I know, it has to be explained. So, Saturn is one of the ancestors of Father Christmas. His festival lasted 7 days from the 17th to 24th of December and was the most joyous time of the joyous Roman year. For the whole week, no work was done, the one law being good cheer and good nature. But the 25th of December was the culmination of it all, like the greatest festival in the Roman calendar, the birthday of the unconquered sun.
No. Oh.
There was great rejoicing, public games, all the shops were closed, presents were exchanged, and the slaves were indulged in special liberties.
Oh, dope.
On this one day they were free. They donned the conical cap of the freedman, as frolickers continue at Christmas and on other festive occasions today to don caps of paper and sit at table while their masters wait on them. It was a time of peace on earth because by Roman law, no war could begin during the Saturnalia, and of goodwill toward all men. Maybe not women, but just says all men. So we also have the celebration of Yule, which comes from the freezing forests of Northern Europe, which explains the obsession with evergreen trees and Christmas traditions, which, you know, I'm guilty of.
Hmm.
It's me. Hi. I'm the problem. It's me. Imagine everything just dies and or is buried in snow because it's winter in northern Germany, but you've got some of these evergreen trees just staying alive, obviously. Like, we should just start worshiping them. So, during Yule, the villages were decorated with evergreens, presents put under and in the trees, large feasts and a lot of drinking. Because let's be honest, it was probably very, very cold, so everyone should probably be drinking.
Yeah.
Also in Scandinavian mythology, December 25th was celebrated as the birthday of Odin's son, Freyr.
Oh.
That's interesting. Yeah. Literally everyone's birthday is on December 25th. Like, every god, it's ridiculous. So, part of this tradition in Iceland is that of the Yule Cat. According to legends, the Christmas or Yule Cat is a monstrously huge black cat that only appears at Christmas Eve when little children are sound asleep, dreaming of the glitter of the Christmas tree and what marvelous gifts lie under it. Unfortunately, if there are no colorful new clothes among these gifts, the innocent little ones, instead of feasting on the Christmas banquet the next day, will become feasted on by the Yule Cat.
Oh!
As far as the Yule Cat is concerned, he's said to be the pet of a supernatural being, Grilla. who may be understood as a dark, twisted version of Santa Claus.
Okay.
In post-medieval Icelandic folklore, Grýla is a terrifying ogress, or troll woman, who mothered the 13 Yule lads.
She comes... Not the Yule lads? No.
Why?
I don't know who they are, but I love their goofy name, the Yule lads.
13 of them?
All 13?
She was probably just this woman that ended up having 13 goddamn boys, and it was just chaos, and they were like, everything's bad when they're coming, everyone hide, you know?
Fair enough.
That's just what I picture. Anyways, so she comes from her mountainous abode each Christmas Eve, and striding side by side with the Yule cat, devours naughty children. The origin of Grýla is almost as obscure as the Yule cats, but it is apparently rooted in the Middle Ages and even beyond. It's still the basic concept of not being on the naughty list, except that if you find yourself on the naughty list in Iceland, you immediately get eaten by a Yule cat and his troll woman master, so maybe don't travel there on Christmas Eve. The Yule lads, who are said to be the sons of Grýla, are more mischievous, like an elf on the shelf kind of stuff. Like, they're not necessarily killing
we've
children.
We've never had an elf on the shelf.
No, because I hate them, and I think they're dumb.
One of my friends sent me a picture, and it was an elf on the shelf that they crucified with tacks, and the caption was just, my aunt's kids are gonna love this. And I was like, what?
Okay. So now we get to Santa Claus and all his variations. St. Nicholas, Kris Kringle, etc. So Santa is obviously tasked with monitoring the behaviors of children all year to determine if they are in fact naughty or nice. Mm. But for the most part, his judgment results in either gifts or lumps of coal.
Do you think Santa's ever been compared to Big Brother?
Absolutely. 1984.
I want a book. About, it's 1984 and everything's the same, except instead of Big Brother, it's Santa.
Oh, I hate it. But, I mean, it's accurate. So, depending on where you fall on the list, you get gifts or lumps of coal. That's my really loud gyre going off in the background, everyone. I apologize. So, I will concede that coal is better than being eaten by a Yule cat. And for jolly old St. Nick, it's believed that St. Nicholas was born sometime around 280 current era in Patera near Myra in modern-day Turkey. Much admired for his piety and kindness, St. Nicholas became the subject of many legends. It's said that he gave away all his inherited wealth and traveled the countryside helping the poor and sick. One of the best-known St. Nicholas stories is the time he saved three poor sisters from being sold into slavery or prostitution by their father by providing them with a dowry so that they could be married. Over the course of many years, Nicholas's popularity spread, and he became known as the protector of children and sailors. His feast day is celebrated on the anniversary of his death, December 6th, and this was traditionally considered a lucky day to make large purchases or to get married.
Oh.
Which is random, but okay.
A little bit.
By the Renaissance, St. Nicholas was the most popular saint in Europe. Also, my social worker brain is immediately going, like, to bad places when I read that he was a monk who was a patron saint of children and sailors, and who also monitored children all year round. But don't
children
worry.
Children and sailors?
Yeah. But don't worry. Okay. I will not besmirch the name of Santa here. I'm just saying there are some red flags. So, on to more creepy variations of the Santa concept. Besides Big Brother, we're not going to talk about that. It's not very Christmassy. You have all been waiting for, I'm sure, the Christmas demon lovingly known as Krampus. It's actually kind of said to be a sidekick that does the dirty work for St. Nicholas.
What is Santa, a mob boss?
Yes.
He got his hitman right next to him? Krampus?
Something like that. So back to the whole naughty list gets devoured idea. He kind of does, like, he deals with the really bad children. So I got the following Krampus info from mythology.net, and don't judge me too harshly. It's hard to find reliable information about Christmas demons. But like many demons, the Krampus borrows several features from goats. Ooh. He has long horns that curl back on his head. His feet end in hoofs instead of feet. His body is covered in shaggy fur, and he has long pointed tongue like a goat. Unlike a goat, Krampus also has claws and fangs. He walks on two legs, dressed in chains and bells that he shakes at people on the street, which honestly I think is hilarious. Like, you're just wearing chains and you're just shaking them if somebody looks at you weird.
So, fair enough, honestly.
He also carries a bunch of birch rods and a horsehair whip in a large sack or basket. The birch rods and whip are used to beat naughty children, but the sack is reserved for the truly wicked. Krampus uses it to haul young evildoers to the underworld. No. It just seems so extreme. So Krampus is not necessarily evil, though. He follows the rules of justice. He only comes after children who misbehave, and while he does seem to enjoy punishing wicked children, he's never seen attacking innocent children. In some ways, Krampus can be seen as an obedient slave. He wears chains, which symbolize his enslavement, and in many stories, he only appears when and where Saint Nicholas tells him to be.
Santa's kind of an asshole.
Yeah. He's kind of scary.
Jeez, Santa. Is he going to send the Krampus after me for saying that?
Probably. Krampus has close ties to the kindly Saint Nicholas. In fact, many Christmas stories have Krampus and Saint Nicholas making their rounds and judging children together. If the child has been good, he'll get treats from Saint Nicholas, but if he's been bad, he'll get the switch from Krampus. Similar characters exist in nearby countries. Necked Rupert is a large bearded man with bells sewn to his clothes and a bag of ashes and coal slung over his shoulder. He accompanies St. Nicholas on his journeys around the world, distributing fruit and gingerbread to good children and giving lumps of coal to bad children. Which, you know, that sounds chill. Belle Snickle is a merry-looking man with a dark side. He gives fruit and cakes to good children, but he beats bad children with a whip.
Oh my, okay. Wait, is his name, wait, what's his name?
Belle Snickle.
I thought you said Belt Nickel, and I was like, that makes sense if he's beating kids with a whip and his name is Belt in it.
I can't stop giggling every time I read Belle Snickle. It's earlier when you were like, what are you laughing about? That's what? I was like, Belle Snickle? Anyways, I gotta get over it. So, it's not hard to guess that Krampus is one of the many pagan symbols who have snuck into Christmas festivities, but the details of his backstory are unclear. Some people believe that Krampus represents the horned god, a popular figure in witchcraft, and that his birch rods are a throwback to ancient pagan initiation rituals.
Oh.
Others claim Krampus is the son of the Norse god Hel. When Christians replaced pagan winter festivals with Christmas, Krampus underwent a transformation. He was associated with the devil. He was placed in a subservient position to St. Nicholas, even forced to wear chains to show his inferiority. But chaining Krampus up still wasn't enough. In the 1920s, the Catholic Church and some political parties in Germany and Austria put an outright ban on Krampus. Celebrating this Christmas demon was not only unpopular, it was illegal. Which is ironic, considering what else was going on in Germany in the 1920s. But Krampus lived on in German and Austrian tradition, and by the 1960s, he was allowed to come back into the light. Now he was embraced as a kitschy folklore figure, and the public latched on to Krampus as a way to reconnect with their ancestors. Eventually, the mounting frustration with the commercialization of Christmas created a gateway for Krampus to invade other cultures. In the United States, people who wanted to protest holiday spending and mandatory good cheer... mandatory good cheer. Like, how dare you be sad? Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of like that. God. I'm sorry.
It's all right. I can leave you.
So, yeah, people who are, you know, protesting those kinds of things, like people who are protesting me and my Christmas cheer, embrace characters like Scrooge, the Grinch, and Krampus, who also rebelled against Christmas norms. Today, Krampus festivals are held all over the world on the evening of December 6th, also known as Krampusnacht.
I like that word.
Legend has it that this is the night Krampus goes after bad children, which... Honestly, that will catch you off guard, because if they're expecting him to be there on Christmas Eve with St. Nicholas, yeah, and he shows up on December 6th.
I assumed he was coming, like, Christmas Eve, Christmas, not December 6th. That's so early.
Yeah. I mean, you gotta get your crap together before the beginning of December. So, accordingly, Oh, yeah. So legend has it that this is the night Krampus goes after bad children. Accordingly, young men dress in fur suits and horn masks and flock to the streets, snarling and shaking their chains at anyone who stops to watch the scary parade. I have to see everyone shaking their chains. Like,
I think next year, should dress up as Krampus and then scare the crap out of our family members.
I think that we should do that tomorrow for Christmas Eve.
I should get one of my sisters. I should crawl through the window and, like, drag her out while she's screaming. That'll teach her.
Well, I mean, some of them could deal. I mean, some of them could deserve a little bit of a visit from a Krampus. Let's just be honest. So, of course, the Krampus has also carved out a small piece in horror literature, even inspiring a horror film called Krampus, which I have not seen because I don't really like horror movies.
Loser.
Have you seen it?
No, I haven't.
Why am I a loser?
Because you don't like scary movies.
Yeah. So, that's all for my weird Christmas myths for today. I definitely, like, bounced all over the world and time with this, but yeah. And I think everyone getting all like, oh, Christmas shouldn't be about you know, like, material things and stuff. Like, we literally buy presents for people.
Isn't there a Christmas myth about a horse skull who comes to your door? Hold on a second. I have to Google this real quick.
I found it.
So I just spent about exactly 30 seconds of research. And it's a Welsh tradition where a horse skull will come up to your door and you have to... in some of the articles I quickly skimmed, it was like you have to... The horse skull sings and you have to, like, beat it in a singing competition. Other ones, it was like a poetry competition.
It's like a battle of wits with Gollum.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure... don't quote me on this, because once again, I did 30 seconds of research, but it said if you lose, it just the horse skull comes into your house and just eats all your food.
It doesn't even harm you, it's just like, I'm here for the food.
I want to be best friends with this guy.
I think the funniest part of this article is that it's like, it basically says something similar to, like, you gotta beat a dead horse. But, like, what started this bizarre thing, and where'd you even hear of it?
I don't remember where I heard of it. It was like a long time. It was like back in middle school or something. I vividly remember hearing about it because I was like, I love that. I want that with my whole heart. I want that to be true.
You want a horse skull?
I want a horse skull to show up at my door and then challenge me to a poetry competition. That's what I want in my life.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It did go over the origins, but I only read it for, like, 30 seconds.
Yeah.
So maybe
Well, it's definitely the weirdest one of the whole entire
Maybe if I have the energy, list. I'll write a little thing about the horse skull.
You should.
I might. Who knows?
You should do a poem about it for your poetry book.
Do a poem about... That wouldn't fit with my poetry theme, but that would be fun.
Battle of Wits with the... What is it called? Just horse skull? Like, what is...
No, I don't know. I just Googled Welsh Christmas horse skull.
Oh, it's literally just...
It just says Welsh horse. Welsh horse. I can't...
Welsh
horse. Stop. It's tradition of Mary Lou? Mary Lou. LWYD. Louis. Okay. So yeah, it's this horse that sings rhymes outside your door. And so it's just a midwinter custom where, like, a horse skull comes with all, like, bells and ribbons and this is on a stick. And it challenges neighbors in exchange for food and drink.
That's great. I feel like you should dress as that, and I can dress as the Krampus, and we can go around and challenge our neighbors for food.
I want to dress up as, like, a horse skull.
Our neighbors would be
knock
like,
on the door
leave immediately.
And be like, I challenge you to a poetry competition. If you lose, you gotta give me all your hot dogs or something. I don't know why hot dogs is the first word that popped into my mind, but it was.
Okay.
Anyways.
All right. Well, that was weird. Thanks for that.
You're welcome.
And we have some other stuff in the works, and I'm not going to tell you about it right now, so you'll have to just find out.
Well, thank you for listening.
Thank you for enjoying these weird holiday celebrations with us, and happy holidays.
Happy holidays. I was going to say I hope the Krampus doesn't get you, but it's past December 6th, so.
Well, I hope that rest in peace, guys. Horse doesn't get you, or if it does, that you guys can jam on some poetry
bombs. Yeah.